Okay, let's unpack this. Imagine a perfectly ordinary evening. You're sitting down to dinner, maybe a glass of wine, some quiet conversation.
Yeah, just normal life.
And then bam, in an instant, everything changes. The world as you know it just shatters.
That's the abrupt, disorienting reality Joan Didion plunges us into with her remarkable memoir, The Year of Magical Thinking.
Right. It's a book that doesn't just describe grief, it takes you right into its chaotic, illogical heart.
And that's precisely where our deep dive takes us today. We're exploring Joan Didion, one of America's most revered and incisive writers,
Definitely.
and her profound account of navigating sudden, devastating loss. This isn't just a story about sadness. It's an unflinching journey into the often irrational landscape of acute grief, observed and dissected by a mind uniquely equipped for intellectual rigor, even in its most vulnerable state.
So our mission today is to pull out the vital nuggets, the insights from her experience, how the human mind grapples with the shock of unexpected death, especially what Didion famously termed magical thinking. We want to uncover what these insights mean for you, whether you've faced loss or supporting someone who has, or simply seek a deeper understanding of, well, human resilience and vulnerability.
Yeah, getting to the heart of why grief so often defies logic, preparation, all our preconceived notions.
Exactly. It feels like it should be predictable, but it's not.
Not at all. And it's truly a rare opportunity to see inside such an intensely private experience filtered through the lens of a master observer.
And that's the first fascinating layer here. Didion wasn't just any grieving widow.
Dolly.
She was Joan Didion, right? A celebrated literary artist, a pioneer of new journalism, someone renowned for dissecting complex emotional and cultural phenomena with, like, surgical precision.
For decades, her prose was known for being exact, controlled, intensely analytical. She built a career on finding order in chaos, on reporting the unvarnished truth.
And that background, that lifelong training, made her a uniquely positioned guide through her own profound grief.
It really did. Her ability to apply those rigorous analytical skills to her own psychological unraveling offers an incredibly rare combination of raw vulnerability and intellectual clarity.
And her marriage.
Yeah, for nearly 40 years, her partnership with her husband, John Gregory Dunn, wasn't just a marriage, but a profound creative and intellectual collaboration. That context is crucial for understanding the immense depth of her loss. His absence was an almost existential void.
So, as listeners, we get this unparalleled view, almost like a forensic report, but from inside the experience of grief itself.
Yeah, we're not just hearing a story, we're witnessing a brilliant mind grapple with its own unraveling in real time.
So, against this backdrop of her incredible observational skills, she zeroes in on this fascinating, almost primitive response to grief she called magical thinking.
Right.
What exactly was she observing in herself, and why is that term so apt?
That's a crucial question. Magical thinking isn't just sadness or denial in the common sense we might think of it. Didion describes it as a profound neurological and psychological crisis, a temporary, well, derangement, where the mind unconsciously, almost instinctively, believes that thoughts, actions, or even rituals might reverse the irreversible.
Wow, like actually reverse it.
Deep down, yes. It's the brain's desperate attempt to impose order on a reality that is utterly incomprehensible and, frankly, too painful to accept.
So it's almost like our brain trying to hit a cosmic undo button when reality is just too much.
Precisely. When faced with the incomprehensible reality of sudden death, rational thought often gives way to this primitive, almost superstitious belief system.
Which must have been baffling for her.
Oh, completely. For someone like Didion, whose life's work was rooted in logic and factual reporting, to find herself succumbing to this irrationality was both bewildering and, as she documented, utterly compelling.
And the most poignant example from the book, the one that really crystallizes this concept,
Yeah.
it's her refusal to part with her husband's shoes.
Yes, the shoes. She explicitly states she kept them because deep down, a part of her believed he would need them when he came back.
Chilling.
It's not just a fleeting thought. It becomes a central metaphor for her entire year of grieving. It's a small, deeply irrational act that embodies the mind's desperate hope and the profound denial that define magical thinking.
It's like holding two conflicting ideas at once.
Exactly. What psychologists might call cognitive dissonance, holding two conflicting realities, no matter how illogical.
That quiet, illogical conviction is such a powerful image, isn't it?
It really is.
It makes you wonder, have you ever found yourself clinging to irrational hopes or rituals in times of extreme stress or loss? maybe a lucky charm or a routine you felt you had to follow, secretly believing it could influence an outcome.
It's a pretty universal human impulse, I think, when we face the uncontrollable.
And this particular brand of magical thinking for Didion was ignited by an event that struck not just with suddenness, but with a crushing double blow.
Yeah, the story begins with that single shocking moment on December 30, 2003. Joan and John Gregory Dunn were sitting down to dinner, a completely ordinary evening.
Like we pictured at the start.
Exactly. And John suffered a massive fatal heart attack right there at the table. Didion recounts the abruptness of it all with chilling precision, writing that life changes in the instant.
She details everything, doesn't she?
Oh, yeah. The 911 call, the paramedics, the hospital protocol. She treats this personal catastrophe almost like a reportable fact, immersing herself in medical literature, questioning doctors, creating timelines.
Trying to regain control somehow.
A desperate attempt to impose logical control over the utterly uncontrollable.
And it wasn't just the shock of John's death. This personal earthquake was compounded by a parallel, equally terrifying crisis.
That's right. Their adopted daughter, Quintana Roo, had been critically ill for weeks, hospitalized with pneumonia that rapidly escalated to septic shock.
Oh my gosh.
Then a cerebral hemorrhage requiring brain surgery. So Didion was navigating the raw, immediate aftermath of her husband's sudden death while simultaneously confronting the terrifying possibility of losing her daughter, too.
That's almost unimaginable, the sheer weight of it.
It is. This compounded grief, the sheer scale of life's fragility laid bare, created this crucible of emotional and intellectual challenge.
How did this double blow fundamentally alter her perception of safety and control? What did she find herself doing based on her account?
She describes feeling as if the very fabric of reality had torn. Her initial response was to lean into her reporter's instincts, gather data, understand the medical facts of Quintana's condition.
Right.
Almost as if intellectual mastery could somehow bring John back or ensure Quintana's survival. It was a desperate, almost instinctive attempt to find a rational framework for events that utterly defied rationality.
Shattering that illusion of control we all kind of hold on to.
Completely. She detailed every medical procedure, every prognosis, as if she could report her way out of the grief.
So looking beyond these immediate shocking events, what does this all mean for understanding grief itself? Didion leads us into this deeper, broader vortex of grieving, uncovering these interconnected themes that challenge everything we think we know.
Indeed. One of the most striking themes is the irrationality of grief, which we've touched on with the magical thinking.
Mm.
Didion reveals how even the most rational among us find ourselves engaging in superstitious behaviors, believing our thoughts or actions can influence the outcome. She famously writes, "Grief turns out to be a place none of us know until we reach it."
Yeah.
We do not expect to be literally crazy, cool customers who believe their husband is about to return and need his shoes.
That line is just, wow. It's not just describing her state. It's a statement about the limits of our own minds, isn't it?
Absolutely. The limits of intellect when faced with overwhelming emotional trauma.
It really challenges that conventional wisdom that tells us to be strong or think clearly in a crisis. Didion shows even a brilliant mind kind of succumbing to a primal irrationality.
Yeah.
Yeah, it tells us that our minds, even at their peak, have these deep, primitive coping mechanisms. Resilience isn't about not feeling crazy. It's about enduring that perceived craziness and somehow finding a path through it.
It exposes the illusion of control.
Definitely. Reminding us that there are forces, like sudden loss, that simply overwhelm our capacity for logic.
So what else? What other themes did she explore?
Another crucial one is the inadequacy of language in conventional wisdom.
Oh, interesting. Tell me more.
Didion critically examines societal platitudes, those well-meaning but ultimately hollow phrases like "he's in a better place" or "time heals all wounds."
Things people say.
Exactly. Things people say, often because they don't know what to say. She found professional grief counseling insufficient, almost patronizing. For her, grief is a foreign country where the language of the healthy simply doesn't apply.
A foreign country. That's a powerful metaphor.
It is. She quotes Arias saying, "A single person is missing for you and the whole world is empty."
That quote resonates so deeply. So if these well-meaning platitudes fall flat, what did offer any comfort? Or what did she crave, if anything, in that foreign country?
Well, what she seemed to crave was acknowledgement of the stark reality, not attempts to soften it or provide neat solutions.
Just seeing it for what it was.
Exactly. She needed people to simply witness her pain without trying to fix it, to understand that her world was indeed, empty in that moment, even if the physical world around her was full.
So silence, presence, that's more valuable sometimes.
Her experience suggests exactly that. Simple acknowledgement of the magnitude of loss can be far more valuable than any well-intentioned but ultimately trivializing words.
Makes sense. And what about identity?
Right. Then there's the profound theme of identity and partnership. After a 40-year marriage, the shift from we to I was an existential shock.
40 years is a long time to be a we.
A very long time. Their identities were so deeply enmeshed, their lives so intricately interwoven, that his loss felt like an amputation of her own identity. She details how their shared consciousness, their private language, their routines, the very essence of their partnership became meaningless overnight.
Leaving her feeling profoundly incomplete.
Yes. It makes you realize how much of who we are is shaped by our significant relationships. The loss isn't just of a person, but of a whole way of being.
That amputation metaphor feels so right.
Absolutely. And closely related is memory as both comfort and torment. The bereaved mind obsessively reviews past events.
The replays.
Exactly. Searching for missed signs, for the if-only scenarios, desperately trying to rerun the tape of what happened.
But memories are also what you hold on to, right?
Precisely. These same memories are what the grieving cling to for connection, replaying conversations and shared moments. She writes, "I could not count the times during the average day when something would come up that I needed to tell him."
Oh, that impulse.
This impulse did not end with his death. It illustrates the ghost-like presence the lost one maintains in the mind, even as the reality of their absence is acknowledged.
Comfort and torment side by side.
And finally, she confronts the randomness of death. Didion deeply struggles to find any meaning or purpose in John's sudden demise.
No neat narrative.
None. Which forces her to confront life's utter precariousness and the illusion of control. There's no grand spiritual lesson, just the brutal random fact of it, which is perhaps the hardest truth to reconcile.
These themes completely overturn so many common assumptions about grief, don't they?
They really do.
What assumptions have you held about how one should grieve or what it means to move on? Didion truly tears those tidy ideas apart.
She shows us a far more chaotic and less predictable reality.
So if grief is this chaotic, illogical, foreign country, how does someone even begin to move from needing his shoes to, well, some form of acceptance? The book's title refers to a year, but it's clearly not a neat linear progression, is it?
Not at all. It's a subtle, excruciatingly painful shift near the book's end. It's not a sudden epiphany like flipping a switch.
No big Hollywood moment?
No. It's a slow, almost cellular level acknowledgement of finality. She describes a specific, profound moment when, thinking of a problem she needed to tell John about.
That impulse again.
Right. The immediate corrective thought that followed was simply, he is dead. That primal impulse to share, still present, was now instantly met with a painful clarity of his permanent absence.
That distinction is so critical. The impulse still arises, but the correction is immediate. The brain is finally painfully integrating the new reality.
Exactly. And this brings us to a crucial, deeply resonant quote. "I know why we try to keep the dead alive. We try to keep them alive in order to keep them with us. I also know that if we are to live ourselves, there comes a point when we must relinquish the dead, let them go, keep them dead."
Keep them dead. That sounds harsh, but
it reflects a profound clarity and a painful necessity. It's the realization that one must, for the sake of one's own continued existence, loosen the grip on the physical presence of the lost one.
Even though the love remains.
Exactly. Even though the love, the connection, the memory persist in altered forms. It's not forgetting, it's transforming.
So it tells us that grief isn't something you simply get over, but something that transforms you. It's an ongoing presence, but its character changes.
Yes.
What does this tell us about the persistence of love beyond death, even in those altered, less tangible forms?
It tells us that love is fundamentally an enduring force, but its expression and experience must adapt. It shifts from active daily partnership to a profound internal landscape of memory, reflection, and quiet enduring.
So keeping them dead isn't about lack of love.
Not at all. It isn't an act of betrayal or indifference. It's an act of acknowledging reality in order to carry that love forward in a new, healthy way within oneself.
This deep dive into Didion's experience offers so much more than just a story. So what does this all mean for us, for you, navigating the world today? How can these profound insights apply to real life right now?
There are several powerful practical takeaways, I think. For those experiencing grief, Didion's work offers immense validation.
That feels huge. language.
It is. It tells you that those crazy thoughts, the emotional chaos, memory lapses, obsessive replays, even those fleeting irrational hopes, they are all normal.
Not signs of weakness.
Not signs of weakness or that you're losing your mind. This gives language to the often inarticulable experience of profound loss, reducing isolation and self-judgment. And it starkly reminds us that grief has no neat timeline or prescribed path.
That's incredibly powerful validation. It offers permission to feel what you feel, however illogical it seems.
Precisely. And for those supporting grievers, it's an essential guide on what not to do or say.
Okay, good point.
It profoundly emphasizes the uselessness of cliches and the critical value of simple presence, active listening, and acknowledging the magnitude of the loss without trying to fix it.
Which is our instinct sometimes, right? To fix it.
Absolutely. But this fosters deeper empathy, reminding us that sometimes the most helpful thing is just to bear witness.
So instead of trying to provide answers, we should focus on simply being present and validating the reality, however painful.
Exactly. Then, for understanding human psychology, it's a powerful case study in cognitive dissonance and the mind's defense mechanisms.
How our brains cope, basically.
Yeah. It shows the very limits of intellect against overwhelming trauma, revealing how even the most rational brain struggles to process events that violate its core understanding of order and fairness. It's a stark reminder of the primitive, deep-seated wiring that kicks in when our world is upended.
And the last one.
And finally, for appreciating life and relationships, Didion's profound meditation on a 40-year marriage serves as a stark, recent reminder of life's fragility.
Cherish the ordinary.
Yes. It underscores the immense importance of cherishing the ordinary days, the small moments, and investing deeply in our significant relationships while they exist. Because, as she so viscerally shows, they can be upended in an instant, leaving behind an indelible void.
That's truly something to consider. So for you, our listener, how might understanding Didion's raw experience of magical thinking equip you differently? Perhaps when you face your own challenges or when you're trying to support someone through profound loss.
It really shifts your perspective on what truly helps, doesn't it?
It does. It shifts our perspective, making us more compassionate both with ourselves and with others.
It helps us understand that the chaotic, illogical aspects of grief aren't flaws, but part of a universal human process.
So this deep dive into the year of magical thinking, it leaves us with a profound understanding. Grief is not an orderly process to be managed, but a chaotic, overwhelming force to be endured. It's a state that fundamentally alters our perception of reality, of self, and of the world itself. It's a journey into that place none of us know until we reach it. And Didion is an unflinching guide.
And Didion's unique and extraordinary contribution lies in her ability to transform her intensely personal catastrophe into universal insight by being both the subject of her grief and its lucid analyst.
That dual role.
Exactly. She created a masterpiece of witness, forever changing the conversation around loss by giving voice to its most private, bewildering dimensions. It allows us to understand that grief isn't a problem to be solved, but a fundamental aspect of the human condition.
Which leads to a final thought, maybe. If our minds, even the most rational among us, can engage in magical thinking when confronted with profound loss, what does this tell us about the very nature of human consciousness, our innate drive for meaning and control?
Yeah.
And how do we truly prepare for a place none of us know until we reach it? Something for you to ponder long after our deep dive ends.